What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC FM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we're pleased to be joined by the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving President and CEO, Jay Williams. Good morning to you, sir.
Aaron, good morning to you and your listeners. How are you?
I am well, and yourself?
I am also well. Thank you for asking.
Well, let us start with a little about the Hartford Foundation. What drives you? What's your mission?
Absolutely. Thank you. The Hartford Foundation for Public Giving is the community foundation for 29 towns in the greater Hartford region, the capital region of the state of Connecticut. We have been around for 95 years. We exist because of the generosity of thousands of donors across the region who over the years have given of them their time, their talent, and their treasure that has allowed us to invest those resources such that we are in a position to provide support to nonprofit organizations across those 29 towns on an annual basis, to work with those partners to really serve and help to improve the quality of life in our community. So I'm a part of a wonderful team of colleagues and contemporaries who, through the leadership of our board, have an opportunity to serve this community.
95 years is quite a legacy. Tell us a little about how the foundation began.
It began with just a couple of individuals who were residents of the community who understood the importance of being able to assist broadly others who perhaps were less fortunate, for those who had been blessed to amass resources. And back then, with just a modest contribution of less than $20,000, to ultimately see 95 years later, an organization that is fortunate to have an endowment of upwards of $1 billion that is in a position to give out between $35 and $40 million each year in grants. Those individuals had the foresight and they had the vision to establish us early on. The oldest foundation in the country is the Cleveland Foundation. It's over 100 years old. So at 95, we are one of the oldest and one of the largest. And as a result of their vision and their generosity, here we are so many years later, still engaged in philanthropy and with a mission and an eye to do that in perpetuity, meaning that through good times and bad, and this is certainly a challenging period for all of us, we will continue to be here to serve and improve the community in ways that wouldn't be possible, again, without our donors or our nonprofit partners.
And certainly there's no shortage of worthy causes out there. What's your vetting process? How do you make decisions on what to support?
That's a great question. And that's where the expertise and the commitment of the staff really come into play. So we have a vision that guides our grant making and our capacity building and our public policy. And that vision really came about as a result of conversations with the community, with stakeholders, input from our board, data guiding us to understand where the greatest needs in the community are. And after doing that, you can imagine that there are always more needs than we have resources. We are limited in our resources like every other organization. And that's where the staff, the expertise of the staff, their own perspectives and experiences in working with nonprofit organizations, really understanding and appreciating and digesting the data to try to make informed decisions that would ultimately allow us to be impactful. And our current strategic focus really is reflective of the challenges that exist in this country and in our region, particularly those challenges that have produced disparities and inequities that are exacerbated by race, place, and geographical location, income, and income stratification. So right now, we, about a year and a half ago, really committed ourselves to trying to focus on economic mobility, creating higher opportunity neighborhoods, addressing issues in educational attainment, employment opportunities, wealth building. So it's a broad area, but we are focused truly on those inequities and disparities that have, again, been driven by race, place, and income. And the data demonstrates that. Our conversations with our community stakeholders and partners demonstrates that. And that's where we have found ourselves really focused over the past year and a half. And it's, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, only been further validated by, you know, the national discussion around race and equity and disparities that we've all experienced over the past several months.
Now, among your latest initiatives, a training program to help strengthen bonds between young people and police in Greater Hartford. Tell us about that.
We are very excited about a partnership with the Travelers Championship. The golf tournament just concluded recently, and that is a philanthropic endeavor. So through a partnership with the Travelers Championship and the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, we are supporting the New Haven Center for Advanced Policing and the Tau Youth Justice Institute for Municipal and Regional Policy. And the idea here is that the Capital Region Police Chiefs Association was very excited about a program that will be about advanced training for our safety forces, our police officers who engage young people, specifically young people of color, and the challenges that have been laid bare with respect to those relationships that are you know, rooted in a whole host of things that need to be addressed. But the men and women who are charged with keeping us safe, with being guardians of the community, the willingness for this Police Chiefs Association to bring departments to the table to really rethink about the training. And there's a lot of expertise down in the Institute, and Dr. Lorenzo Boyd, who was a former police officer who has his PhD, he and his team are excited about this type of training that we believe can be a model for other areas around the region and around the country when it comes to the relationships between our police departments and particularly young people of color.
What are some of the conversations that you hope this initiative will spark?
I hope we hope it begins to spark an initiative of understanding some of the root challenges that exist, and you know, defaulting to the position that you know, men and women who enter into law enforcement do so by and large wanting to protect the communities that they are part of, wanting to increase the quality of life. Young people inherently, you know, also want to have a quality of life in their community. There needs and has to be a mutual respect and understanding, but there also has to be an empathy. And there has to be a realization that in this country, for decades and generations, there have been policies, practices that have absolutely been rooted in racism and structural inequities and disparities that have manifested themselves in so many ways that have driven a wedge between our communities, that have driven a wedge between you know, law enforcement in many instances and the communities that they are charged to serve. So what we are hoping is that it can be an authentic conversation, that there can be a perspective shared from young people, their feelings, their experiences, the law enforcement personnel who have an important obligation and role to play in bringing them together to make sure that people don't just assume that the relationship has to be adversarial, that the relationship has to be confrontational. So, you know, we're excited about it. It's going to take a lot of work from a lot of committed individuals, but we are pleased that the Travelers Championship saw this as an important initiative, as do we, and excited about, you know, really getting into more of the details as the program begins to kick off.
Now, one of your other focus areas recently has been COVID-19 and helping with the state's response. Tell us what you've done in that realm.
That's a great question. Early in March, when the pandemic really began to grip and settle into our communities, the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving activated our disaster response fund. We activated it with an initial contribution from our own resources of $1 million. And the idea was to have a rapid response fund that would support residents who are most vulnerable to the health and economic impacts of COVID, to stabilize nonprofit organizations in the region, knowing that we needed to be more nimble, more impactful, and do this in a shorter period of time than we probably would have ever had to do before, because none of us in our lifetime had faced a crisis like this. Since we started that fund, the community and the donors have responded in ways that are just awe-inspiring. Over 300 donations, 300 different donors, ranging from donations of $15, which we are very much appreciative of, to individual donations of $1 million. We have seen the corporate community step up as they typically do to support the region in which they exist and are great corporate citizens. And we've raised over $4 million over the past 3 months or so. We've put out almost $6.5 million in grants to more than 120 organizations. And these organizations, again, are focusing on food insecurity and access to healthcare and transportation and childcare, all the things that were of the utmost importance when we were at the height of this pandemic. And the COVID fund is still active. We are looking to broaden the support to nonprofit organizations who are still recovering or trying to recover from or become more stable in the face of this pandemic. So we are humbled by how donors, individual donors, family donors, and the corporate community responded to provide resources that were put directly out into the community to help people survive this life-altering crisis.
From what you're hearing on the ground, how challenging is it for some nonprofits in Connecticut amid the COVID crisis?
It is exceptionally challenging. The nonprofits in our state were challenged prior to this, and there was a conversation about how they needed the resources to remain stable, to survive, even when we were in the tail end of the greatest economic expansion we've seen in our lifetime, a 10-year economic expansion, we still saw challenges. So you can imagine the effect and the impact when we slid into a COVID-induced recession. The needs were exponentially greater and the resources were exponentially less. And that's where, as a community foundation, working with other community foundations across the state, working with the governor to leverage the resources that were directed toward our nonprofit, they are still struggling. It is a reality and an unfortunate reality that there were nonprofit organizations that entered into the pandemic that may not emerge on the other side. That is a significant loss to our community because of the critical services that they provide to our citizens and our residents. So what we try to do, in addition to the financial support, is try to build and strengthen the capacity of those nonprofit organizations to try to find platforms to collaborate, to raise, lift the voice of the nonprofit community. So, again, without which we as a community would be far worse off. The challenges that we face now, absent the nonprofits who are out there on the front lines, I can't imagine the type of community that we would have if we didn't have them. So we want to see them emerge stronger. We want to see them continue to be able to provide the quality of life that is necessary. They provide essential services on behalf of cities and states. So, the challenges remain, Aaron.
You're listening to Face Connecticut. We're talking to Jay Williams. He is the president and CEO of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. It seems in many of the initiatives you undertake, there is more than one organization putting up funds to make something happen. There are matching funds. How important is that for everyone to kind of have skin in the game?
We think it's very important, and we recognize and appreciate that each organization brings a different level of capacity. Some organizations are able to match, a dollar for dollar. Other organizations are able to put some, modest but meaningful amount into the activity. Sometimes the organization, it amounts to an in-kind contribution. But we do believe it is important to have an investment in the activity. And again, whether the investment is a financial investment or a contribution of expertise or the time of their volunteers, we look and consider all of that. And it's important because there are never enough resources to go around. We are fortunate and blessed to have the endowment that we do, but that endowment is subject to the market fluctuations. The endowment is subject to, you know, our donors who are, one of the amazing things is in the midst of this economic decline, our donors dug deeper into their pockets. They said that we want to, even as we face our own challenges in our families and in our individual situations, we want to give more of ourselves. So the ability to leverage those dollars to help them go further is something that we think is very important. As a matter of fact, I had a conversation with the governor just several days ago about an initiative that the Hartford Foundation helped to support with the $200,000. It was able to attract $800,000 in federal funding. And the governor was highlighting that as one of the approaches that he has consistently championed as important for us to leverage and bring more dollars as a result of this type of collaboration.
I'm thinking you might be talking about the Kineticor program. Is that correct?
I am talking about the Kineticor program. Absolutely.
Tell us a little more about that. That it's modeled after the AmeriCorps program, which has been in Connecticut for a number of years, but this is Connecticut's version of it.
That's Connecticut's version. And the governor, he was relaying that he knew AmeriCorps and asked why was there not a Kineticor version, particularly in this particular time of challenge that we are facing. And what it does is recognizes that many nonprofit organizations rely on volunteers who are retired, who are in their or approaching their golden years. And that is an invaluable resource. That being said, those were the same individuals that were more susceptible to the COVID pandemic. And it was critical that they limited their exposure to being infected. So what happened, it left our nonprofit organizations with a dearth of volunteers, people who had it in their heart to volunteer, but who had to very pragmatically step back from the front line. So to fill that gap, the concept was to tap into our talented young people, our youth of this community and of the state who are talented, knowledgeable, energetic, many of whom were graduating from high school or college and would be looking for summer employment or post-collegiate employment. But because of the economic decline, those positions weren't available in the quantity that they might otherwise be. So being able to tap into that reservoir of young talent, an eagerness to serve their community, to provide them a stipend for volunteering that would ultimately allow the nonprofits to continue to do what they were doing, was really the definition of a win-win-win situation. So we were pleased to be able to provide some seed that was attracting, now collectively, $1 million+. And the governor said, hey, if we can get more, we can do more. So that's a very good example of the type of collaboration that ultimately results in nonprofits continuing to be able to serve, connecting our young people to contribute to their community, and allowing those more traditional volunteers to take a step back temporarily for the benefit of their health and well-being.
The Hartford Foundation has also been involved in putting up money to help people or get people to fill out the census. Tell us why that is so important. There really is a multiplier effect there, isn't there?
Absolutely. And this is where I got to give a shout out to, you know, Yvette Bello and Don Grant of the Hartford Foundation, who just recently gave all of the organization an update on our census activities, the enthusiasm and the passion in which those, two ladies lead this effort underscores the importance of the census. There has been, it seems like a lifetime ago, but just months ago, all the controversy around the census and the questions that were attempting to be put onto the census, which caused a great deal of concern. We were able to get past that, and then COVID hit. And when COVID hit, the census may have of an important issue because this is now about life and death and about survival. But the census became even more important because the census is the driver or the determinant of the federal resources that come to the state of Connecticut, that come to our communities. And an undercount has the prospect of devastating this community for a decade, for 10 years. An undercount would mean that we would not get our fair share of dollars in Connecticut and into the communities within the Connecticut to provide for basic human needs, education, environmental causes, to try to help businesses and entrepreneurs, and to be short funded for 10 years, you know, the effects of that just become compounded. So the census efforts are very much underway. We think it's important that we invest in organizations who are helping to connect to people who are hard to count, who may be facing a language barrier, who may not have full trust in some of the federal government programs, which is understandable. These organizations have credibility. They've got relationships into the farthest reaches of our community. And in doing that, they are helping to ensure that Connecticut is counted accurately and as a result, the resources that are due to residents of this state and to our communities are arrived and ensuring that we've got 10 years of appropriate level of funding.
The city of Hartford in particular has been a difficult area to get people to fill out their census forms. What are some of the innovative ways that folks are going into the city to get people to understand the importance of this?
That's a great question. So ensuring that we have bilingual, helping to ensure that we have bilingual messaging, whether it's digital messaging, whether it's actual traditional type advertising, individuals who are bilingual going out into the community. So they see familiar faces. They see people who they have some level of comfort with, who bring the credibility to say, it is important to fill this out. Do not worry about whether this information will be shared and ultimately cause you a challenge in some other aspect of your life and living. Connecting to young people, getting them excited about the census, why it's important, making it practical. Saying that you see that library that you enjoy, you know, the community center that you're able to send your children to. Do you remember when you needed to get transportation to that job interview that you ultimately landed that job? All of those things in some way, shape or form are supported by federal funds that come to the state of Connecticut. So making it real to people that it's more than just answering a couple of questions on a sheet of paper or online is an important part. And I think the other thing is showing how easy it is. I literally, and I don't, this is maybe a confession that I should be somewhat ashamed of, but I got my census form a few months ago, meant to go online, kept putting it in my briefcase. And just a few days ago, went online. It took less than 10 minutes. It was as easy as filling out, you know, almost as easy as filling out, you know, a purchase from Amazon. But the results are much more significant. So, you know, that is why the need for innovative, creative ways, and we cannot allow a city like Hartford to be undercounted for the reasons that I just previously articulated.
In our last 90 seconds or so, tell us how people can support the Hartford Foundation and also plug how you can be a little more nimble sometimes than government, which can be slow to act in some circumstances.
Government can be slow to act, and I say that from firsthand experience, having been a mayor, having worked at a federal government, well-intended, but sometimes bureaucratic and gets in its own way. We, as an organization, are seeking to be very nimble, very responsive, close and proximate to the challenges and the opportunities, and that comes through the relationships that we have in the community. It comes through the commitment of our board of directors, and it comes through the expertise and the passion of the staff. I would invite people to our website, hfpg.org, hfpg.org. We are also on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram, all the social media channels, just to see the breadth and depth of how we engage the community. We appreciate the support to the foundation, but more importantly, support the organizations that are our partners, that are in the community doing the work, and our website is a great place to start.
He is Jay Williams, the president and CEO of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
And I truly enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.